For Parshas Chayisara, we want to look at the pasuk in Perek Chav Dalid, pasuk Nun Ches. Hatelchi im ha'ish hazeh. We're talking about the shlichus of Eliezer. He's bringing Rivka to Yitzchak. It's one of the longest stories in the Torah with great detail. Chazal already point out Yofa sichasam shal avdei avos mitorasam shal bonim. That we learn so much from every expression of Eliezer and every single facet of this story, of this episode, in the Shlichus of Eliezer et Avram. One of the questions in this sugya, in this parsha, is that the Torah seems to use two different words, two different terms, to describe Eliezer. Sometimes he's called the Eved, and sometimes he's called the Ish. And we would have to really go through all the psukim inside. We're not going to do that now. But the general approach of the Mefarshim, I wouldn't say it's universal, but it's certainly the consensus of Mefarshim, amongst the Mefarshim, is that when Eliezer is acting as the Shliach of Avram, in the way he should, but he's not adding anything on his own, there are no new insights, he's not throwing any curveballs, as we would say, then the Torah calls him an Eved. The word Eved means that all he has is the will of his master. He has no will of his own. But often Eliezer is adding something. He's going beyond the purview of his shlichus. He's acting out of his own decision-making process as a creative human being. He may be doing this to enhance his shlichus. Then the Torah uses the word ish to describe him. Because now we're talking about Eliezer as an original person, as an ish. For example, in that section of the shlichus of Eliezer, where Eliezer comes up with the test, the idea that he's going to see which girl is going to implement chesed next to the be'er, next to the well, she is the one to be chosen for sure as the marriage partner of Yitzchak. Certainly here Eliezer is coming up with his own idea. He's adding, enhancing the shlichus based on his inside, his creative thinking. And sure enough, the Torah calls him Ish. Now, when we look at the pasuk that we began with, Haselchi im ha'ish hazeh, and this is a pasuk that relates and describes the last part of the episode, the last piece in the puzzle, namely Rivka going with Eliezer, the Shliach of Avram. We would think that as the culmination of the Shlichus, the description of Eliezer should be that of an Eved. After all, now the servant of his master has succeeded and accomplished the very goal that his master sent him on, namely, to bring back a marriage partner for his son, for Yitzchak. This is the culmination, the successful culmination of Eliezer's function, his role as a shliach, as an Eved. And Rabbeinu Bechai is wondering about the Lashon Haselchi im ha'ish hazeh. Why does the Torah use the word ish to describe Eliezer when we're talking about the entire shlichus coming to its fruition? And after he asks this question, he offers the following answer. He says that the word ha'ish, or for example this entire sentence haselchi, is not divrei Torah, but rather divrei achia ve'ima. These words are literally a quote from her brother. We're talking about Lavan. And therefore, it's not shaykh to say Hatelchi im ha'eved hazeh. That would not be, according to Rabbeinu Bechai, miderech Musar. It would not be a kavod to Rivka, to their sister, to their daughter, to say, will you go with this Eved? You know, you don't walk around with an Eved. And it doesn't give the entire episode a chashivus. We know that the word ish adds dignity It reflects a certain status and stature of a person. Will you go with this man of stature? Not with an Eved. And what we get out of this, Rabbeinu Bechai, is almost the Derech HaLimud. That's what I wanted to point out to you. How to learn Chumash. To be sensitive that sometimes the Chumash uses words which are really coming out of the mouth of someone. It's a direct speech, a quote, verbatim, of somebody who made a statement. The Torah, in that sense, is testifying and telling us a story, if you will, the Sipurei HaTorah, about so-and-so who said such-and-such. Those were the words that came out of his mouth. This is not the general language of the Torah. You know, you can talk about the general language of the Torah in one sense, and you can talk about quotes and words that came out of the mouths of different personalities that are spoken about and described in the Torah. That's a whole different category. And in that light, perhaps, you can add another flavor just to give a little deeper insight into why the relatives of Rivka said, Haselchi im ha'ish hazeh. The word ish here indicates a certain anonymity. You know, he's anonymous. We don't know who he is. He doesn't have a definite name or a definite address. We don't know who he is. If you would say Eved Avram, which is the way Eliezer identifies himself, Eved Avram Anochi, then it gives him a certain identity. But the indication by using the word Ish is, well, how do you know this guy is Eved Avram Anochi? As he said he is. Who says he's up to the truth? And basically, what they were implying when they said Haselchi Amayish Hazeh is a kind of rhetorical question. The answer should surely be no. Why would you agree to go with this Ish who claims to be the Eved Avram? How do you know he's the Ish? And this would reflect the approach and the goal of the members of Rivka's family. They were trying to look for any way possible to undermine her decision, her commitment to leave home, to go with the Eved Avram, and to marry Yitzchak. This was their attempt. They wanted to shter her. They wanted to discourage her from acquiescing and going with the Eved Avram. They were the ones who said, Teshev Hanara Imanu Yamim O'asar. They were really hoping that perhaps at the end of the day, after doing one stall tactic after the other, the whole deal would fall off. They weren't really interested in a genuine way in giving her up. And if you take a look at the pasuk that comes a little bit later, and the pasuk says, Vatokam Rivka v'naroseha, Vaterchavna al hagmalim, Vatelechna achrei ha'ish. And then it says, Vayikach ha'eved es Rivka vayelech. If you're very meticulous, you will notice that in this pasuk, it's pasuk Samach Aleph, the Torah uses both terms, almost simultaneously in one breath, in one verse, to describe Eliezer. He's either the Ish, or he's the Eved. And this is very confusing. So I have here a sefer that I wanted to introduce to you. It's called Kedushas Pshuto Shel Mikra. And in this sefer by Rav Cooperman Shlita, he points out that you can interpret the following. Al derech hapshat. The shlichus was to take Rivka and to really remove her from the bias of Lavan and Besuel. He doesn't elaborate on that point, but just to add a little bit of my own, we know that the whole process of creating Klal Yisrael, which now at this moment, finding a marriage partner for Yitzchak was in the balance. This was a critical crossroad in that development. And in doing so, Rivka would have to come in to the picture, join the family of Avram, of Yitzchak, then eventually Yaakov, and she would have to be completely cut off from her family. She would have to remain pure with the proper midos and not be influenced and impacted by base Lavan, base Besuel. And therefore the shlichus of Eliezer really can be reduced and concentrated on one word, vayikach. Vayikach ha'evedes Rivka. Vayikach means to separate her from her environment, from those polluting and contaminating influences that morally would bring her down. So it's vayikach. And here for sure, the Torah has to describe Eliezer as the Eved. This is the apex of his shlichus, the vayikach. Not only the culmination in the physical world, but moreover, in terms of the divine existential purpose, the goal that has to be achieved, it's vayikach ha'eved. However, earlier in the pasuk, in that very same pasuk, the Torah is describing not just Rivka, but rather the naros of Rivka. This was a whole entourage. And therefore, the halicha was achrei ha'ish. This is no longer part of the shlichus. The shlichus is vayikach ha'eved es Rivka, vayelech. But the first part of the pasuk of v'naroseha vateilachna, that is not the essence of the shlichus, and therefore, the Torah uses the word ish. And the yesod advarim we already saw in the mefarshim, who understand that as long as Eliezer is functioning in the capacity of shlichus, he is the Eved. But once we remove him from that capacity, put him in a different context, then he is an ish. And that's exactly as Rabbeinu Bechai saw it, Haselchi Ma'ish Hazeh. This was a sentence that was quoted verbatim for the members of our family. This is no longer describing the shlichus of Eliezer, and therefore Haselchi Ma'ish Hazeh. When Eliezer completely cuts Rivka off from her Na'aros, from her whole entourage, which is at the end of Pasuk Samach Aleph, Vayikach Ha'eved es Rivka Vayelech, at that point, he's the Eved. At that point, he's certainly serving in his capacity as the Shliach of Avram. And if we fast forward to Parshas Toldos, and specifically to the Torah Tmimah on Parshas Toldos, we will see this approach that we've already seen in Rabbeinu Bechai come to a very dramatic expression. When we reflect in Parshas Toldos on the difference between when the Torah describes an event that happened and when the Torah quotes a sentence, a verse, a statement verbatim, it's a whole different story. The Lashon HaTorah and the Lashon of someone who's speaking in the Torah, who's being quoted, if you will, are two fundamentally different types of Lashonos. And that has tremendous repercussions down the line. So we'll see this in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Tes Zayin. It says, V'yes Oros Gidiei Ha'izim. And this style of Gidiei Ha'izim, meaning the style of using a plural, Gidiei Ha'izim, is noticed by Chazal. The pasuk says, V'es Oros Gidiei Ha'izim Hilbisha Al Yodov V'al Chelkas Tzavorov, describing Rivka, who is dressing up Yaakov to go in to Yitzchak and take the brachos. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amid Beis interprets that when it says Gidiyizim, then it means that these are goats. That's the extra word, ezin. However, says the Gemara, when the word in the Torah is gedi, without ezin, without the appendix, then the word gedi is a generic term that includes many species of animals. It includes the para, it includes the rachel, it includes sheep and cattle, and that's all included. And the Tor Tmima is bothered by this. He says that the importance of the fact that gedi, when it's on its own, without the appendix of ezim, includes para and rachel, is halachically significant in the terms of the law of velosavashel gedi b'chalev imo. The word gedi here is used by the Torah, and the iser of losavashel, etc., all the other isurim that are derived from this pasuk, includes not just gedi ezim, not just the milk of goats, but also the milk of cows, the milk of sheep. Chalav para v'rachel b'mashma. V'rachel b'mashma. And the Torah Tmima now is bothered by the following. That pasuk is not the first pasuk in which we find gedi ezim. Before this, in pasuk tes, in Perek Chav Zayin, we find that Rivka turns to Yaakov and she says, Lech Noel Atzon, the Kachli Misham Shnei Gidiei Ezim. So you see that Rivka went out of her way to hear the word Ezim. We find this also in Parshas Vayeshev, in Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Chav, Vayishlach Yehuda Es Gidiei Es Gidi HaEzim. And the Gemara in Chulin that we mentioned earlier on Kuf Yud Gimel quotes that pasuk again to derive the conclusion that if it says gedi stam without the appendix ezim, then it also includes other animals. But says the Torah Tmim, if you look earlier in that same parsha, not in Lamed Ches Chaf, but in pasuk Yud Zayin, it says Vayomer Yehuda Anochi Ashlach Gedi Ezim. So why does the Gemara quote the later pasuk? Usually the Gemara will quote an earlier pasuk to derive its conclusion. And therefore, based on this, the Torah Tmim says the following: Ela nira l'daiti barur derotza Gemara lahavi raya miloshan haTorah atzma velo miloshan bnei adam. Once again, the same distinction that we saw earlier when we spoke about the pasuk haselchi, which was a quote from Lavan. Here too, we have to differentiate between Rivka's language when she talks, she addresses Yaakov, and she says to Yaakov, Lechna el atzon, v'kachli bisham shnei gdiyizim, or Vayomer Yehuda, which we'll see later on, Anochi eshlach gdiyizim. So even though in those two psukim, the word, the phrase gedi ezim appears, so the appendix ezim is a limitation that tells you what kind of animal, what species, what category is included under gedi. Nevertheless, we cannot derive any halachic conclusion, says the Torah Tmima, from a statement that came out of the mouth of whether it be Rivka in one case, whether it be Yehuda in the other case. We can only derive conclusions from Lashon HaTorah Atzma. That's the phrase that the Torah Tmima utilizes. And therefore, the Gemara can only derive the conclusion from later psukim, from the pasuk, V'es oros gedie izim hilbisha, which is the Torah's way of formulating and describing what she actually did, or in the case of Yehuda, V'yishlach Yehuda es gedie izim, where the Torah again is describing Yehuda's action. So that's Lashon HaTorah. But the earlier psukim in both cases, which are Divrei Rivka, Divrei Yehuda, those are not to be, cannot serve as sources for any halachic conclusion. That's what the Torah Tmima says. So we see that we don't derive halacha d'oraisa from an expression, a statement that somebody made, even though that statement is recorded in the Torah. Not only that, from a statement that someone makes, we don't even derive a definition of a word or a term, especially when the definition of that term would have halachic implications. And therefore the Gemara will be willing to quote a later pasuk, where the Torah is using its own language, Loshon HaTorah Atzma, and absolutely avoid a quote from somebody who's speaking in the Torah. Now, again, when we get to the pasuk Anochi Eshlach Yediyei Izim, which is a pasuk in Yehuda, that Yehuda formulates, this is his expression, his statement, that Anochi is not inferior to any other pasuk in the Torah. Again, even though it's a statement, and therefore says the Torah to me, we cannot derive halakhic conclusions or even definitions of words. But nevertheless, I don't want anyone to misunderstand here. It's a pasuk in the Torah. It has the same identical kedusha, Anochi Eshlach Yediyei Izim, has the same identical kedusha as Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We're not talking about kedusha. We're not saying that an expression or a quote from somebody is less significant in terms of its status as psukim in the Torah. If you're missing one letter in the Torah, the Sefer Torah's pasul, we're just talking about the power of obligations that could be derived from the Torah. In that sense, we could differentiate between a dibur of the Torah, Lashon HaTorah, and a dibur of someone who's speaking in the Torah. And when the Rambam, in his Yud Gimel Ikrim, wants to describe the significance of every single word in the Torah, he says, don't differentiate between Anochi Hashem Elokecha, which are three words, and the three words V'timna Haisa Pilegesh. Like, once again, as far as Kedushas HaTorah is concerned, those two phrases are absolutely identical. There's not a hair's breadth of difference in terms of the Kedushas HaTorah. But in terms of Chiyuvim, well, the Rambam from Anochi Hashem Elokecha is going to derive a mitzvah sayin taryag. And V'timna Haisa Pilegesh is just a statement describing a reality. That statement describing a reality is incorporated in the Torah L'netzach Netzachim. It becomes part of the eternal Torah. But again, differentiate between a pasuk in the Torah, a language in the Torah, which teaches me halachas and mitzvahs, and a pasuk in the Torah, which although it's part of the reality of Netzach, of eternity, it has the Kedushas HaTorah, and every letter is crucial. Nevertheless, as far as halach is concerned, the difference in style is significant. You know, the style of Lashon HaTorah is one thing, and we can derive conclusions and halachic implications, as opposed to the style of a quote from someone. There we cannot derive halachic conclusions. The parsha of Moav and Ammon in back in Parshas Vayera is very fascinating. I want to call this to your attention. And here we're in Perek Chaf, Psukim Lamed Zayin and Lamed Ches, and we're talking about the birth of Moav, the birth of Ammon, Vatikrashmo Moav, Vatikrashmo Ben Ami. And the Rambam opens up the 11th chapter of Hilchos Melachim with a discussion about the Mashiach. He says, Amelech HaMashiach Osid Lamod Ulahachzir Malchus David Liyoshna L'memshala Rishona. This is one of the fundamentals of our belief, of our faith. The Mashiach will in the future stand up. He will reinstate the kingship of David as it was, as it existed at the time of David. And the Rambam is very emphatic about this. Kol Mishenu Mamin Bo. If you don't believe that, then you forfeited your chelek. He says, Lo Bashar Neviim Bilvadu Kofro B'Toras Moshe Rabbeinu. Not only is he denying the belief in other prophets, but he's countering and undermining the belief in Toras Moshe. In other words, Mashiach itself is a promise that's embodied in the Torah. And the Rambam says, a Mashiach HaRishon Hu David, the first one who saved Klal Yisrael was David, Shoshias Yisrael Miad Tzareim. In all his battles, David HaMelech successfully defended the Jewish people from their enemies. And so too, says the Rambam, Mashiach HaAchron, the ultimate Mashiach, Sha'omen Mibonov, who's going to be from the offspring of David HaMelech. Shemoshias Yisrael Bachrona, he at the end of days, B'achris Hayomim, will save the Jewish people from their enemies. So we see how important the belief, the fundamental belief in Mashiach, is from the Rambam's perspective, and the Rambam is Marchiv there in Hilchos Melachim, both in Perek Yud Aleph and Perek Yud Beis. Now, when we think about the fact that David HaMelech, his entire history, his entire life, and we're going to illustrate this, is connected to a sequence of problems in the area of Arayis, of sexual immorality. It begins with Lot and his two daughters, which we saw in last week's parsha, and from that relationship between a father and two daughters, we have the birth of Ammon and Moab, until finally the great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech, who comes from Moab and is allowed to marry Boaz, because Boaz introduces the halach, the drasha of Moavi, velo Moavis, but this all comes as a result of that night, those two nights of Lot with his daughters. And then we find the birth of Peretz, who's going to be on the father's side of Dov. Before we spoke of Rus on the mother's side. Where does Peretz come from? He comes from a relationship between Yehuda and Tamar. And that is not what we call a kosher relationship, because it's a father-in-law with a daughter-in-law. And finally, we're going to have in David's lifetime himself, he personally will have a relationship with Bathsheba, from which, you know, there'll be Doros of David HaMelech, and Bathsheba is a married woman. So all these issues in the area of sexual morality come up in a very concentrated way in the life before David HaMelech, leading up to his birth, in David HaMelech's own life. And it's something that really requires understanding. What is the connection here? Now, the Sepharno opens up a bit of a window here. Vatikra Shmo Moav, Vatikra Shmo Ben Ami, says the Sepharno Lahoros, Shalonis Abru Me Adam Bilti Hagun. This is the Sepharno as opposed to Rashi, because Rashi says that the nature of the birth of Ammon and Moab is something that's pejorative, that's negative, but here Rabbeinu Ovadia Sepharno is looking at this in a positive light, and he says the following. He says that Ammon and Moab came from Lot. Lot is not someone who's bilti hagun. Again, the status of Lot is, as we've discussed many times, is very questionable. But the Sepharno sees Lot as someone, as we saw in his Achnas Sorchim, who somehow imitates Avraham Avinu in many ways. So Ammon and Moav are coming from good stock, according to the Sepharno. And not only that, but these two individuals are called Avi Moav, Avi Ammon, Avi Bnei Ammon. Says the Sepharno, Sheyarshu Aretz. It means that these two individuals merited to be, each one respectively, to establish a very important nation, and every nation needs its land, its homeland. Kimipnesha Hoysa Kavonas Hanoshim Ritsuya. He says, because the Bnos Lot had the proper intention, it was something that God willed. Therefore, Hayazaram Lishnei Goyim, each one of these girls was merited having offspring who would be two nations. Yarshe Avram Miktas. They would be, to some extent, part of the legacy of Avram, because again, we're talking about Rus HaMoaviyah, who comes from Moav, and Naama Ha'amonis, and both of them joined the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, each one in her time. And Ke'omram, he says, B'chol drachecha da'eyu afilu dvar aveira. In all our ways, says Mishlei, we should know God. And what's B'chol? What's the ribui of the word kol? So the Sforno says, Afilu Dvar Avera. And what does that mean, that a person should know God when he's doing a sin? He's talking about a concept which we'll see in the Gemara in Nazir, which is called Avera Lishma. And if you look in the Sforno, in the parish of Yudah V'Tamar, later on in Perek Lamed Ches, there too, the Sforno indicates that Tamar Tzadka, when Yehuda says Tzadka Bimeni, it means that Yoser Mimashet Tzadakti Ani B'Kiyum Emunasi, she exceeds, says Yehuda, my fulfillment of my faith, which means that she went beyond the law, violating the law, but yet she's considered Tzadka Bimeni. She did what we call an Aver Lishma. Now, the Gemara Nazir quotes Ula, who says Tamar Zinsa. Again, Tamar had this relationship of Znus with her father in Yehuda. And Rashi says, V'niskavno l'shem mitzvah lahamid zera kirichsiv ki rasa ki gadel shiloh. So Rashi points out that her kavanah, her intention, was l'shem mitzvah. Ula goes on, he says, Zimri zina, he has now a conscience between Zimri, Zimri ben Solu, who on the other hand had an immoral sexual relationship with Kozbi bas Tzur. And Rashi says, v'niskaven l'shem avera. In contrast to Tamar, Zimri's intention was for an avera. Says Ula, Tamar zinsi yotzim imenu melachim unevim. From the relationship between Tamar and Yehuda, we're going to get melachim, which means David, and nevim, we're going to get Yeshayahu Anavi, and this is based on a Gemara in Sota Daf Yud, that Yeshayahu ben Amotz, Amotz is a brother to Amatzia, and we learned in the Gemara Megillah that Kol Makom Shehizkir Akosiv Navi V'Shem Av B'Nevius, whenever a Navi is described by the Tanakh with his father's name, B'Yaduashu Navi Ben Navi, we know that his father was also a Navi. So we're talking about Nevi'im that came from the Znus of Tamar. Zimri, Zina, on the other hand, Zimri had this illicit relationship. Naflu Olav Kamarivos Yisrael. And as a result, thousands upon thousands of Jews died. Omer Rav Nachman Bar Yitzcha, Gedola Avera Lishma. In other words, when a person has an Avera and he does it Lishma, L'shem Mitzvah. Mi mitzvah shalol lishma, it's even greater than a mitzvah which is done shalol lishma. The Gemara doesn't like this statement, it's going to have to refurbish it. V'amar, Rabbi Yehuda, Marav, Liolam Yasuk, on the Torah, mitzvah, afilu, shalol lishman. Shemitoch, shalol lishman, ba lishman. So we see that even a mitzvah shalol lishma, when you are motivated by exterior alternative motives, ulterior motives, nevertheless, it's considered a mitzvah and it's great. So how can you tell me that an Aver Lishma is greater than that? Ela Ema, refurbish the words of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav, as if he had said, Gedol Aver Lishma ki mitzvah shalol lishma. No, they're equal. Tichsiv, tevorach minoshim yael eshes chavrakeni. In other words, like those women that we found throughout Tanakh, that they did mitzvah shalol lishma, and it's called Ohel. The Gemara says, Minoshim bi Ohel Tvorach, meaning that Yael did an Avera Lishma. She wanted to weaken the physical power of Sisro so that she would be able to murder him. Man Noshim Sheba Ohel. And who is a woman in the Ohel who had a mitzvah Shalol Lishma? Sarah, Rachel, Leah, the Mahos Sha'amru Lebaleim Lavosh El Shivchasam, that they presented there, each one respectively, a Shivcha to Yaakov, to have children from them. V'lo L'shem Mitzvah Niskavnu. What motivated them wasn't pure mitzvah. Ela kifi shemiskanos zubazu rachel bachosu sarvul leabimos. Each one of the mos had a certain element of kina, of jealousy. The kulam nemar ben ohel midichsiv krot. So the psukim referred to the ohel of each one of the mos. And when the pasuk says minashim bi ohel tavurach, it's equating, it's comparing the case of Yael to the case of the Imos. Yael is the case of an Aver Lishma, and Imos, a mitzvah Shalol Lishma. And all these are being equated. So it means that the Ol represents the Imos, and Yael has the same status in this Pasuk is being equated to the Ohel. She too is sort of in the Ohel. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sheva Be'ilos Baal Oso Rasha Be'osa Shah. 7 times Sisro had relations with Yael. Shenemar Bein Raglea Kara Nafal Shachav. Rashi explains how Rabbi Yochanan concludes that it was 7 different times. V'akam is Hanya Me'ilah Delay. So the Gemara asks an interesting question. This is what I want to call to your attention. Didn't she have Hana from the Be'ilah? Om Rabbi Yochanan kol tovason shel rishayim eina ela ra etzel tzaddikim. A pleasure that is pursued by a rush, by an evildoer, that same pleasure, if it's experienced by a tzaddik, is called ra. Shenemar Yishama lecha midaber im Yaakov mitov ad ra. Bishlema ra shapir el tova my lo el lav shmamino tovaso rahi shmamino. His tova, meaning what would be considered a tova for love on his ra for Yaakov. But let's focus on the Gemara's question. That's why I want to call to your attention. V'akamis hanya. In other words, that she had a hana. As she's fulfilling this Avera, she's getting pleasure. And the premise that the Gemara is operating with when it raises this objection is that any Mila, any special status in a positive way that you want to attribute to an Avera Lishma, in this case to Yael having relations with Sisro, is totally lost. It's totally forfeited because of the Hana that she, the benefit that she had from this Maisa, from the action. And therefore, it's not on the level of mitzvah shalol lishma, but perhaps it's all already, it's even considered an avera, simply because the avera, in the case of an avera, there's a basic fundamental condition to take that avera and elevate it to a lishma kind of an avera, such that it be considered like a mitzvah. In other words, the Lishma in an Avera Lishma is not just some extra add-on, but it's absolutely essential. It's a precondition to the license that a person could have to implement an Avera L'shem Mitzvah. If it's not Lishma, then it's not an Avera Lishma, and it's not a mitzvah in any sense, it's an Avera. And this was the Netziv in his Pirush al Torah, in Brachos Chav Zayin Pasuk Tes, points out, he says, "Vehine Amru Barabi quotes the Medrash Rabbi Shenenash Yaakov Avinu Al Shegaram Li Esav Tzaaka Gedola Umara." Yaakov would be punished because Esav, when he finds out that Yaakov had taken the brachos, he lets out a tzaaka, a cry, a bitter cry. And the question is, where do we find the punishment of Yaakov Avinu for the Tzaaka Gedolah Umara? The answer is we find that Mordechai in Megillas Esther, when he finds out about the decree of Haman, it's he also the same 3 words, Tzaaka Gedolah Umara. That's a punishment for the Tzaaka Gedolah Umara that was caused by Yaakov Avinu. So then Netziv doesn't understand. He says, why should Yaakov Avinu be punished for the tzaka of Esav? I mean, if you're looking for a tzaka, you're looking for causing pain, then Yaakov caused such anguish to Yitzchak Aviv, his own father, who says Vayechrad Charada Gedola. And then the Tziv here has a fundamental breakthrough in order to explain the difference between Yaakov's relationship to the Tzaka Gedolu Mara of Esav and whether or not Yaakov could be faulted for the Charada Gedola of Yitzchak. He says the lishtamish ba'aver lishma, when a person wants to utilize the license of aver lishma, for example, the case of Yaakov, who's going to take away the brachos from Esav. L'shem shomayim yesh li zoyer har beishlo lehenos mimena klum. Klum, he says. The person should not benefit whatsoever. No enjoyment from the action. Lo dami liyosei mitzvah. In a case of someone who's doing a mitzvah, afagav denena gamkein, even if he has some side benefits from it, hamitzvah mekomo medes, the benefit that you derive from a mitzvah doesn't undermine the mitzvah and its value and its status as a mitzvah. Mashein came by avera lishma, where the action itself is an avera. How do we convert it, transform it to a mitzvah? So we can only do so if it's purely lishma. But if there's hanah that comes to a person from the avera, is then, whether he likes it or not, it's called an avera, because the hanah that comes from an avera is considered an avera. That doesn't have the chalos lishma on it. On the hanah itself, if we isolate the hanah element that's derived as a result from this of this avera, that itself doesn't lend itself to lishma, because he's getting benefit from it, he enjoys it, he wants it, he loves it, and that pleasure is absolutely an avera. Here too, in the case of Yaakov Avinu, who does an avera by tricking his father, so as far as his father is concerned, he doesn't have any benefit from that. On the contrary, there's no question that Yaakov was extremely anguished by the fact that Yitzchak was chored charada gedola. He was absolutely onus in this case. It was all against his will. And there's no benefit whatsoever from Yaakov's perspective, and therefore comes under aver lishma. He's not held responsible and punishable. But as far as the tzaak of Esav, apparently from this chazal you see that Yaakov had a certain simcha in his heart. He enjoyed it. And therefore, he was punished for that, because he caused this anguish and this tza'aku gedolu mara to his brother Esav through this avera of anochi Esav bechorecha, of tricking his father, of lying to his father. And he's absolutely enjoined from getting any benefit from that avera, and any benefit that he gets is punishable, is liable. It does not come under the halacha of avera lishma. And in the sefer that I pointed out to you, Kedushas Pshuto Shel Mikra, he makes reference to the Alshich in the episode of Pnina, the daughter, the sister of Hannah, that they were both tsaros, they were both married to the same man, and she, Pnina, had many children. Hannah had no children, she was childless until she gave birth later to Shmuel. And Chazal say that Pnina wanted to get her tzara, Chana, to pray to Hashem with a great deal of enthusiasm, with a profound prayer. And therefore, her intention was lishma. Says the Alshich that despite the fact that she was motivated lishma, she did not live up to the high standards of an aver lishma. He says, Amru Chazal ki Satan upnina l'shem shamayim niskavnu. Satan al kvod Avram shenemar bi'iov yoser mivavram upnina kidei shetitzak chana l'ashem v'yitein lo hirayim v'hinei l'uma ze. Amru Chazal ki b'chol echa be'abonim shahoysa chana yoledes hoysa pnina koveres echad mivoneha. So the question is, the Alshich is very critical of Pnina and points out that she suffered as a result of her causing anguish to Chana. It would seem then that from the Alshich, Pnina had a double kavan. On the one hand, she was jealous of the fact that Chana was more beloved in the eyes of her husband than she herself, than Pnina. In fact, he would give half of what he had to Pnina, even though she had so many children, and the other half to Chana, even though she was childless. At the same time, a human being is complex, there was a kavana l'shem shamayim. She wanted to get Chana to cry out to Hashem, to pray in a more profound way, so that she would have children. And then, if she would have children, then the way that the possessions were divided would no longer engender jealousy. And in that sense, it seems that her Avera was not purely Lishma. I want you to read through the Alshich. I'm not going to go through the Langa Arichus here. His language is certainly challenging. But the bottom line is, the Yesoda Dvarim, is that the reason why Pnina was punished so severely and her children died is because apparently her Avera Lishma, to get Chana to Davin, was intertwined with a certain element of Shalol Lishma. There was something inherent in her intention that was Shalol Lishma. And the only way of getting an Avera Lishma as a positive achievement is only when it's done perfectly and completely Lishma. And Avera Lishma has these requirements. Also, a person, in order to achieve an Avera Lishma, has to be absolutely guiltless with regard to that Avera. So, for example, Chazal seemed to indicate that if Pinchas himself would have been guilty of the same Avera with the Benos Midjan as Zimri, in the case of Zimri and Cosby, if at some later point he would have gotten involved in that kind of Avera, Chazal seemed to indicate that Pinchas would have lost all the rewards that he got. Lemafreya, everything that he would have done when he killed with the Maisa Kanos, when he killed Zimri, would have all been considered an Avera of Ritzicha. So this is the Yesod, that you can passel an Avera Lishma, even Lemafreya, unless you do it with total Lishma, with the Shlemus of Lishma. The Kavana has to be pure. You have to be absolutely guiltless beyond that Avera. No Shemetz, no contamination of that Avera whatsoever. The Netziv goes even further in its Pirush al Torah in formulating and emphasizing the scary nature of Avera Lishma, how far you have to go before you can gather, you can subsume your actions under Avera Lishma. He points out that not only a later action could disqualify and undermine Limafreya on Avera Lishma, but not only that, even if something happens later on, Ba'ones, and it's not a fault of yours at all, that also can undermine the positive status of an Avera Lishma. And he quotes the famous Gemara about Nazir, that why does the Nazir bring a Gemara, a Chatos? Gemara in Tainis Daf Yud Aleph says that Lodaycha Bamesha Asral of Torah, Tzir Atzman Ayayin, he accepts upon himself, he's Mitzar Atzman Ayayin. And yet the Torah allows a person to become a Nazir. So that's a paradox. On the one hand, he's being punished. He brings a Karmel Chatos for the Chait of Tzir Atzman Ayayin. On the other hand, he's allowed to do this quote-unquote Avera because he wants to reach and achieve higher levels in spirituality. And we see that there is such a thing as a Nazir Lishma. So let's call a Nazir Lishma an Avera Lishma, because he accepts upon himself his Naziris to enjoin himself from Yayin and from being Metami Lemes and from cutting his hair. So if it's an aver l'shma, why does he bring a carbon chatos? Al shetzir atzman yayin. So the Netziv points out that if you read the psukim in Noso very carefully, v'chiyomus meis olav befesa pitom, v'timei rosh nizro yavi shtei torim v'yosa koin echad l'chatos v'kiver olav me'asher chot al nefesh. So the Torah itself says befeta fisom, that somebody died and the Nazir became Tomei Lemes through no responsibility, no guilt or carelessness of his own, and yet the Torah says that he has to bring a Korban Chatos Asher Chot al Nefesh. Isn't there a principle of Onus Rachmana Patri? So the Netziv explains on the Pasuk Me'asher Chot al Nefesh, this is in Bamidbar Perek Vav Pasuk Yid Aleph, he explains that even though Bepesa Fisom, the Torah is testifying for the fact that there's no guilt whatsoever on the part of the Nazir, nevertheless, he was a Chote. He was Porish Atzman Ayayin. Even though, again, the Porish Atzman Ayayin itself is not enough to engender a Chet because it's under the category of Aver L'shma. But now, as a result of being Mitzar Atzman Ayayin, Lefesa Fisom, he becomes Tomei, and he contaminates, he violates his Kedushas Nazirus through Tumas Mes. Oh, if that's what happened as a result, then in Iglai Milsum Afreya, that this Hizir Atzman Ayayin, even though it was done in order to achieve some sort of Tainug Ruchni, some sort of level of Dveikus, Aval Achar She'ira Lo Bionis Zu Hasiba, Osu She'ina Roilaka. The fact that he became Tomei, again through no fault of his own, is an os. It's sort of like a divine revelation of the fact that he, this Nazir, was not roi, he was not on a level of Aver L'shma to take upon himself the Ziris. La'azir Atzman Ayayinu, he came Bechinam Tzir Atzman Ayayinu Bikesh Dovar Shegavah Mierko. He, we now see, was not on the level to be Mitzayir Atzman Ayayin. It was Bechinon, there was no license for it. He wasn't in the getter of Aver L'shma. So not only is an action that would take place at a later time period Megala L'mafreya, retroactively, that it's not an Aver L'shma, and therefore it's an Aver, but even something that happens to a person of Ones could demonstrate and prove L'mafreya that he, this individual, was not on the level, on the darga of Aver L'shma. And therefore, the concept of Aver L'shma, of a person taking on for himself Aver L'shma, is basically a nil concept. It's an empty set. There's no one who really could say about himself that he knows himself, that he's on the level of Aver L'shma. Okay, we'll stop here.